It comes.
Wireless facilities siting, and the next one was on wireless facilities siting in California.
Yes.
You want to see the other ones?
Yeah, the first one I think I have like 7 or 8 slides, and then the next one I have, let me see, where is it?
And
2.
You said it was 16? On the second one?
On the second one, slide 18 and slide 24. No, I thought when you mouse over the bottom, it pulled up the images.
Right, but some of this looks right. This is 18. City planning perspective on wireless. So that's where I wonder. So I have this one.
Santa Barbara County because a doctor by that name.
Yeah, we'll do the first one first and just walk through.
Get me an escrow for
well, first I'm going to ask if everybody's had a chance to look at those.
Nice to meet you.
Glad to have you on board.
I just want to point
sure.
out a couple things for discussion.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being so.
You might thank me now. I don't have many. I don't have many. I have it on here. All right, let's get started. So we'll call to order the regular meeting and special public hearing of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, August 24th, 2017. First item is to introduce our guests and staff. We're joined by Senior Planner Jamie Burrell, Lynn Hyde, Associate Planner, Eileen Kiefer, who's our City Attorney, and welcoming our brand new CED Director, David Miller. Welcome. Anybody like to give David an introduction, or David, would you like to do one?
Well, I'll just give you a little bit of the history, because it's kind of nice to know, you know, who you're working with and where they've been and, you know, what their experience is. I'm originally from, I graduated from UW in architecture, and I actually went to junior high school in Spokane. My dad was in the Air Force, and he retired there, and spent a couple of years at school in Colorado, and then came out to UW. Spent about 20 years of my career in the private sector. I had my own business for 7 years and did a lot of project management and got on some teams with some really great people to do some good design projects. Did interim department head things for different cities, so you know I got to stay there long enough to get in trouble and leave. And then I, in addition to that, I've worked I worked for a little while up here as a public works director in Redmond. In the 80s, and boy, it doesn't look anything like it did then. And I also have worked in Arizona. I've worked in California for most of my career as both public works and community development director in different cities. The city I came from is Folsom. It's just under 80,000. And to give you an idea of the scale of things here, we finished an annexation in 2011 of 3,500 acres with a designing population of 30,000 people, and they're putting in $60 million worth of infrastructure right now. And a large part of that is the exodus from the Bay Area because of the high prices, the same thing you're facing here. Mm-hmm. And the economic development engine of the Sacramento area is on overdrive now because everything is much more affordable. Conducting business, hiring people. There are 120,000 people from Sacramento who drive to the Bay Area every day, and so they're trying to keep them there. So, you know, the growth pressures, you know, we've had plenty of experience with that, and I've worked in small communities as well. I've worked in La Grande, Oregon. I worked in Half Moon Bay, if you've ever been down on the coast south of San Francisco, beautiful little coastal community. So I understand how things work in a small town, limited resources. But sometimes that's where you find the most creative people. So I'm very happy to be here. It's a beautiful community. So I'm looking forward to it.
Welcome. Oh, welcome. Thank you. Next, the chair will call the roll. Commissioner Gildersleeve. Commissioner Heller.
Here.
Commissioner Lucky.
Yep.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Ryan.
Here.
Commissioner Von Trapp.
Here.
All righty. The purpose of this legislative meeting is to discuss the proposed amendments to North Bend Municipal Code 18.10.030, our wireless public facilities plan, and also introduction to code amendments associated with Ordinance 1626, the Tanner Landing and Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay District. This meeting is being recorded and minutes will be available on the city's website following the meeting. Our procedures will start with approving the minutes, public comment on non-agenda items. We'll hear from our staff on the items that we're discussing. We'll open up our public hearing, and then after the public hearing, the Planning Commission will ask their questions, make any motions or changes, and talk about our next items. Just a reminder for those in attendance, after the Planning Commission makes a recommendation, it moves to the City Council, where they might also have another opportunity for you to speak and where final action is taken. Okay, next item is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion? Motion by Commissioner Lucky. Second? Second by Commissioner Ryan. Any comments or changes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Agenda is approved. It is unanimous. Keep in mind, Planning Commission, I would like to thank the staff for adding the times to our items, but given that they are so tight, I ask that we keep our conversations relevant and specific, our questions well thought out and targeted, okay? And hopefully we can make our way through all these items. Next item on our agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to address the Planning Commission on something that is not on tonight's agenda? Yeah, see, I have to get our agenda in line with the same thing I'm doing. Thank you very much for that reminder. My notes, their agenda. Okay. Approve the minutes for July 27th, 2017. Do I have a motion?
I move they be approved as submitted.
Okay, and a second? Motion by Commissioner Ryan, a second by Commissioner Lucky. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for July 27th say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is approved. It's unanimous. Thank you. Public comment on non-agenda items. Anybody from the public wish to address the commission? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number four, which is a public hearing on wireless public facilities and reintroduction. I'll turn this over to our associate planner, Ms. Hyde, to reacquaint us with this wonderful technical topic.
Thank you, Gary. Also, I'm about to run out of battery for the hotspot, so while I'm introducing it, do you want to write down every slide you wanted to see, and I can pull it up before I lose the internet? You got that? Awesome. Thanks. Okay, well, so you did see this wireless facilities one other time as an introduction, and what we realized was we had a lot more updating to do to it to bring it up to state and federal law. So what we've done since then. So a moratorium was placed in November 2016 when we realized that our code was not in line. Currently, it is listed as a permitted use in our table of permitted uses, but the only spot where it's governed is under a conditional use permit, but the table of permitted use doesn't lead you there. So there was a missing link, so we put a moratorium on the acceptance of any new wireless communication facilities. So we have renewed the ordinance, or the moratorium once, so the next one will expire in October of 2017. Fortunately, Eileen has been able to take the time to really update our code. So the memo that's in front of you shows where it's currently a permitted use. And so it's currently permitted in every zone, which I think at one point it was a conditional use permit in every zone, but at some point that got changed. And then there we have only a few land use performance standards currently in our code that are applicable to them, but I think you should take a look at those to see which ones we want to make sure get carried over to the new code. Eileen, who is our attorney, has worked to bring forth two ordinances. The first one is an ordinance that pertains to the siting of new facilities, and the second ordinance pertains to the modification of an existing facility. There's a lot of law in here that talks about how it has to be processed, the shot clock. A lot of cases have been a precedent to these ordinances that are in front of you that Eileen can speak more to. And really what your focus is on is none of the shot clocks, none of the law that is federal law, but more the look where, how we want to regulate the look and feel of the wireless facilities ordinances, wireless facilities. And I know that Gary had some images. I'm sure if you got a chance to look, there are lots of images online you can look at to start to get a feel, because I know I didn't know what they looked like. And a lot of them you don't even notice when you see them. You might see one but not know what it is, because they're pretty well camouflaged. So I'm going to get these slides pulled up so Gary can speak to them when he's ready.
Okay. Well, thank you for that introduction. Appreciate it. So before I open up the public hearing, anybody from the public that wishes to speak is provided a time of 3 minutes, and please state your name and address for the record. With that, we'll go ahead and open up our public hearing at 7:16. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close our public hearing at 7:16. Next is for Planning Commission questions and changes. Who would like to begin?
I can go through this page by page, Mr. Chair.
So I will say yes, page by page, but what I'll do is start at the packet page 7, and if nobody has anything, ask for the page where somebody has something. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, so that way we'll move a little bit quicker. Okay. So... for page 5 and 6.
Who do we thank for the numbers on the packet?
Tom helped me.
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
I have a general question.
Sure.
That's, what I guess I see a couple pictures here, but what's the best way to camouflage these? Are there, can screen well. I mean, I guess colors would be one, earth tone colors or something, not like silver, which is how a lot of these are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, there's different designs, I guess, but I don't know exactly what they are, but I'm sure everyone probably wants something that's in the best. You know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much those cost, if that's
that.
The more camouflage, the more it is. Or if it is a cost, it's just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the slides might help visualize what we might or might not. Okay. So if you're looking at page 8, that's kind of what you're thinking of. Just looking at those pictures, does anybody have any thoughts about what they see there is what would fit in our city or what wouldn't. Looking at page 8.
Well, I guess the two things that stand out to me are the picture in the top right. I'm wondering, I mean, I see a building and it's seeing the antenna or any wireless thing. So if there's something there, maybe I like that one because it's like invisible. And kind of the same thing with the bottom left.
Right. Yeah, so 1 and 2, no thanks.
Yeah, 1 and 2, I would agree.
The bottom left, yes. Bottom right.
Borderline, in my opinion. I mean, it kind of blends in visually with the sign. Might be getting to the edge of intrusive.
I don't think that sign would be permanent in
right.
the city.
Yeah.
There, so
okay.
That's a little misleading.
Okay.
Right.
Now, the one we didn't talk about is the one on the top left, which is the light pole with a box on top.
My general comment is that now that you brought my attention to what this looked like, I've seen them more, but not knowing what I'm looking at, I never noticed them, so that's my comment.
Yeah, as long as they're kind of sculpted like that, they kind of fit into the natural surrounding. Mm-hmm. So I kind of lean towards that picture on the top left as something that would be acceptable.
Yeah, it depends how high it extends.
So where is it exactly on the lower left? Is it that corner, that little wiry piece that sits out?
There's multiple. They look like
multiple.
Paper clips on the side
okay,
of the
so
building. It also looks
multiple.
Like a seam in the building.
That's
got
the
it.
One in Bellevue off Southeast Avenue.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I've seen them in Issaquah, and they're like, the ones that they've had are wooden poles that kind of do a nice, beautiful sculpture up high, you know, but they're very obvious, but kind of natural too. It's just.
For sure.
Yes.
I didn't notice anywhere in this that previous years was a big discussion about electromagnetism emissions. It doesn't seem to be a lexicon anymore. It's safe to say that these devices have been evolved to the point where there's no discussion about.
It is mentioned in there.
Emissions.
I think I might be pulling it up, but there is a reference that says they have to meet the federal. That'll take me a minute to find.
Yeah.
Well, I have to know where it is.
That you're right. That is mentioned, but that's presumed. It's just that there used to be, no matter if it was missing standard, people just still freaked out about it. That doesn't seem to be any
mm-hmm.
a problem with people that live around these and worry about.
You're right. So it is, and I understand what you're saying. So, to follow up where it is, 1870-140, page 25. But I see what you're saying is it being acknowledged, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're going from like an aesthetic, from now aesthetic focus to
right.
It used to be front eggs of the dash.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think something that kind of rewinds a little bit. I go up to Rattlesnake Ridge and I see those towers and all those things up there.
Which is a pole with antennas all around?
Right.
Yes.
And I see different, I guess what I assume are cell phone towers on the highway in various areas. Those seem to be not exactly what we're talking about. I'm wondering how much this is going to apply, considering we're surrounded by higher terrain. What exactly needs to fit into our city? And it's like having that scope and understanding it is going to help me
mm-hmm.
right now. I mean, obviously we don't want those, but they're going to be because they're up there. But so, like, are we talking about local more cell towers around here, or like a citywide Wi-Fi, or?
Eileen, so there does seem to be a need for it, and I'm not sure of the coverage explanation why. Maybe Eileen can explain more that. But we do have people requesting, even with those up there, we have people requesting to place them in the city.
So can you speak more to that?
Sure. And just bear in mind, I have no science background. I was a poli-sci major, but I am a telecom nerd. I spent years as a utility lawyer before I came to Kennedy-Eason. So at any rate, you might get the tall towers. You might get the big antenna arrays. It just depends on what the application you get. And at this point, we don't know what the city's going to see. Those could belong to a certain provider, and you have a different provider comes in, can't access those, doesn't have a deal with whoever owns those particular facilities, so they may want to put up like a duplicate type facility. So I don't know who exactly has approached the city. You said that been, I think like one or two perhaps. Mm-hmm. But the law says essentially what the city has to be concerned with is not prohibiting placements such that you cause any particular provider to not be able to close what's called a significant gap in coverage. And that's kind of a squishy term. It's going to depend on the facts as they are, based on where they want to put it, what they're proposing, and what kind of gap they are trying to fill. So that's a long-winded way of saying you might see those.
Okay, then that helps.
And then the second
oftentimes
part
of that, they just want coverage, you know, right. In an area with it. I mean, I lived in an area that was fairly urban, and we couldn't get any reception at where we were located. And it was just because they received, you know, in a direct, almost visual way. And when you get people coming in, they usually want to get coverage to places they don't have it. The other thing you get a lot of is co-location. So you have Verizon come in, they want to be on an AT&T. Well, I don't know legally what we can or can't do, but in the cities I've worked for, we've insisted on co-location.
Yeah.
And we also would locate them as often as not in our parks because we could get lease income from them, and we could also combine them with lighting and other things that are fairly high. And if you attach them to some, say, field lighting or something like that you're going to have anyway, then they kind of disappear. So there are some advantages you want to look for if you can get them. If you can get co-location, if you can get it on public property, if you can get some lease income. If you can't tell it from the light poles and what are on the poles, then it's not so obtrusive. So there's some ways you can correct people for getting coverage and fulfilling their business needs and still, you know, do something for the community.
Okay.
And then the follow-up to the second part of the question I heard. So what we have put in here on page 23 is that if it's a freestanding facility, like the ones you're referring to on Bouncing Bridge, it has to be a monopole. They're the only type that are allowed in the city, so you wouldn't get one that's the, you know,
Lattice Towers,
yeah. Right? It wouldn't be quite the same.
Okay, so that limits the height.
Commissioner Ryan?
You know, my comment about these larger towers is we already have any high elevation inside the city limits to control. Our city's pretty much on the floor, so those people are lying our distance. My day was with the warehouse and all that stuff up there on Rattlesnake Ridge. That's all international, transcontinental aircraft. Boeing has a lot of use of the towers to transmit all throughout. Those are your TV towers up there. They're all sharing the same location. I don't think we'll have an applicant come down in North Bend with those large facilities needs. I'm very surprised about that. But I am respectful of what you're talking about, that they can be intrusive to neighborhoods. Putting them in the parks does help.
Okay.
By the way, can I say that I, for one, am not going to be a spell checker tonight on this?
Yes.
This is not an exercise I want to do anymore. It's spell check. This is somebody else.
Appreciate it.
It feels too much time.
Okay.
Yeah, you can always just hand me any spell check you need.
Let me hear that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see it.
So I go all the way to page 15. Anybody have anything before then? 15 of our packet. And my question is on H.2, primary equipment enclosures are no larger than 17 cubic feet in volume. Is that arrived at some specific requirement that it fits a certain type of equipment in there, or do we have ability to modify that?
Definition question.
So I'm just thinking of the light pole, and some of the examples that we saw, there was quite the bulge up at top, and I'm trying to think about, you know, if you have a pole that's, I don't know, 8 inches in diameter, and then you have your 12 inches on either side extending or something.
Yeah, and I'll just clarify that this particular definition relates to small cell facilities, so this is going to only be applicable to a smaller type equipment application, if that makes sense. So this, a lot of times what, I'm trying to think of how to explain this, there's a lot of different components that wireless companies might ask for, and so a lot of times they'll want to deploy what's called small cells to boost coverage. You're not really going to get a lot of capacity out of it, but they might distribute them because they're easier to site, they're easier to camouflage, and it essentially boosts signal. And so for small cells, we have a definition for them here because you have an option here of treating them differently and grouping them all together in one application should the city want to do so. That comes from state law. State law says that cities are encouraged to take all those up at once should they want to, but the city is under no obligation under state law as it is today to do that. But that's why that definition is there. It just relates to what constitutes a small cell facility with regard to enclosures that are larger. It just means they're not a small cell. They're a wireless facility.
Got
it's
it.
Not a small cell.
So that's more of a classification of a small. Now, in point G, personal wireless services means commercial mobile services and unlicensed wireless services. I wasn't sure what commercial mobile services are, but is one type emergency alert systems? You can't believe everything you read on the internet, which is why I'm asking. And if so, then I see how that's very relevant with the hikeable trails and areas that we have that we want to maybe treat these as more of a higher priority in some way, or my thought.
I don't know that one off the top of my head. I mean, I'm happy to look that up and get back to you on that. I would imagine we have I know that there are typically agencies that talk about first responder, like in Texas it was CSEC. I'm a transplant, so I think of everything in terms of what I know. So I would imagine Washington has a component agency that handles that.
Wasn't it that woman on Tenerife that couldn't get her cell phone out?
Mm-hmm.
Very immediate use.
Yeah.
They found her, but not by her phone.
Mm-hmm.
But also emergency alerts could be weather alerts with storms coming in and people who get trapped.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I think that these would include that, but let me double check.
Okay. And just as a personal geeky, yes, I looked up unlicensed wireless services, and those are the people who operate between 1920 and 1930 megahertz. And so if you have a wireless mic or something in your facility that you're trying to use and they have more power than you, they will cancel out your mic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you have an amateur radio club around here, too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ham radio, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That might be it.
There's a bunch of licenses under ham.
Yeah.
Oh, right up into the commercial buffers. Depends on what they've got.
Here's a deletion on page 14. I want to give kudos to staff. Under purpose and intent, the last line in 18.7, we removed our encouraged. That convinces me that we're buttoning down our look at this. I appreciate that. Just that simple motion makes it clear to me that you guys are just blowing over us.
Okay. Does anybody have one before page 17?
I did have one on 17.
Commissioner, back up.
Okay. 18.7.070/17, number 2, there it says a microcell or minor facility in a multi-family business, commercial, or town center zone. I was wondering, do we want to align those to the actual zones that we have?
Well done. Well, we talk about microcell here, and we talk about small cell and personal wireless services. The microcell is 4 feet in height and an area of not more than 580 square inches. Okay.
This might be Pandora's box, where credit might really be to focus on. I mean, I'm measuring this from residential areas, certain things that would be acceptable.
Yeah.
Whereas in, you know, our interchange area, there's other things, and I don't think those things are going to be the same.
I agree very strongly in that. I think in microcells, if they're 4 feet or less, it would be fine in most zones. I don't know, at this point, do you want to pull up the slides? Because we're going to get, a couple pages before.
Can I add to the other page on that same paragraph? My margin notes remind me that we want to make sure not to interfere with emergency landing sites that would be parks, parking lots, things like that. We might have aircraft come in to avoid putting towers near those. Maybe if they're in parks, put them extremely on the edge where they won't interfere with the terms of landing. But you need to be careful about that.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering where some of these cell towers and other things are currently in town. Do we have anything?
We don't have any. That we're aware of. Yeah.
I think there's one outside of town. If you go up Ballarat towards the nursery, the Mount Saint nursery. But instead of taking that right to the street, so it's outside of the growth area. But I thought there's a tower out there. It's kind of at the Waffles. Just sits a little bit above the trees. Good example. It's very visible.
I know there's a provider that has wireless throughout our city. So there's something somewhere. We just don't know what it's, where it's
another
camouflaged.
One right across Fryberry. It's actually behind a home, literally in the guy's backyard.
Okay.
Which you look at the house and think, what were they thinking? Because the house was built after the tower. But it's literally, you take a left on Ryberry and just keep looking up to your right and you'll see it.
Okay. Anything else on page 17?
Did we settle on, I'll change the zones.
Yeah.
And right now it has multifamily, business, commercial, so I can change those to our corresponding. Do we want those same zones?
We have downtown commercial, but we also have neighborhood business.
Yeah. I think we would keep all the zones there and allow me to be more specific in another page.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's where I'm going. Development standards. That's what I'm asking. Anybody else on page 19?
19. Mr. Ryan. Paragraph 2, right towards the bottom. It releases the applicant from providing certain information, and I'm wondering if that's a backdoor issue that we need to shut.
Again, you're referring to point 2 under N?
Point 2 under N.
Yeah. So our new Community and Economic Development Director can release an applicant from having to provide one or more of the pieces of information on this list upon finding that the specific case involved said information is not necessary to process or make a decision on the application being submitted. You're saying that can just open up a...
I think that gives somebody a backdoor.
Any other thoughts?
I mean, I've seen things like that before at the discretion of the director. I mean, is that common to just throw that in there and be flexible?
Mm-hmm, it is. We have it in a lot of our sections where the director who has been hired and is trusted has the discretion to do that. On some codes, there is not that caveat, though, if it's something that you feel really strongly about. Or there's a different process where if you want a variance, you have to go through a variance process.
We're adopting what appears to be language from some other source. And so I want to make sure that this language is our language, that we've read it and understand what it says, and that's accepting it as because it's in this document.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to make sure the commission doesn't just look at that point two, but the application requirements, which is A through N. And so what this is saying, if you're a small cell provider, maybe you don't have to include one of those points, which might not be necessary. I'm kind of leaning, you know, that's where their discretion and their professional knowledge comes in, that it would make sense to not put undue requirements on somebody.
I'm not pulling my sword, just I'm just pointing that out.
Yeah, I think it's a good discussion point. Commissioner Ryan, I see this in a few things where I think maybe it's warranted to change. But.
So, for example, a site like landscaping plan showing the specific placement on the site, showing the location of existing structure trees. So a landscaping plan might not be something that's applicable to every application. If it's something like the one we saw in Bellevue that it's going up on the top of a building, it may not be applicable, and then it's just one more step for staff to have to go through and ask for it and find a way out. So.
Okay.
Good. Sounds good.
Page 20. Yes, sir.
Letter C, 1 and 2. I was having difficulty telling the difference, and so that seemed redundant.
Ms. Kiefer, you think you could help us out with that one?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
The RCW is not there, it's only difference.
Well, yeah, it's about CEPA requirements, essentially, is what's going on here. This was taken from state law, which is why it reads a little funky. But that doesn't mean you can't change it. That's portion C is optional. And in fact, this particular ordinance, I should point it out, is presented essentially cafeteria style, trying to pull different things that different cities do to give you guys options as a legislative body. So don't feel hamstrung by what's here from a legal perspective. But with this one, I mean, we can see if we can tighten that up. I think that I want to credit the legislature with making that distinction for a reason, but it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't a reason for that distinction either.
I don't make a habit of reading RCWs when I have read that simple process. I was reading this book, and then I went back and I have. I understand that happens for a reason that I'm not even interested in, but
right.
I didn't know if it was intentional or unintentional.
Right.
I can look at it and see if the codified law has something special in it that distinguishes one statement from the other. That's what I think. I can see that it might be different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. It's just something I noticed.
Mr.
Chair.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, entire official set on page 20. Looks like all of section C. It writes or it says at the discretion of the applicant, at will they do this? Do they do that? Wouldn't it be better that at the director's discretion, applicant may do this? Or shouldn't the applicant make it known that they're be filing for? permission of the director, Mr. Miller, to make one application rather than several applications. Why would we let this be an applicant discretion?
So I think your point is valid, and just to get some feedback from staff, if we struck at the applicant's discretion and put at the approval of the CED director, would that make sense, and would that put undue work on the department, or?
Well, I think Eileen can speak to this more, but I think the RCW is saying that the city cannot tell you you can't. This RCW is saying that they are allowed to submit all in one.
Well,
is that right?
What the RCW does is it encourages cities to take small cell applications in one batch. If, for example, T-Mobile comes in and says, I have 10 microcells that I want to deploy throughout the city. Instead of having staff review 10 separate applications for teeny tiny facilities, the city is encouraged to take them all up at once and for them to come in and say, I want 10 antennas, here's where I want them to go, here's what they're going to look like. But this is not required. The city doesn't have to do it. It's just an encouragement under state law.
Would that be more efficient for staff? If they file them all at once?
A lot of times people want to do this just to save money. I think what it really depends on is each location unique and different, and should it be considered as whole? And so I think the discretion you use is to say if there's something that's particularly sensitive that we need to look at, and but the rest of it can be bundled, that you can do it. So it just allows you some freedom. Even if you do submit them as bundling, I'm sure that the staff will look at each location and make sure that they were treating them all well, and making sure that, you know, we didn't miss something because we took them as a whole. So I don't think the review is going to be much different. It'll just save the applicant some money.
Yeah.
And Mr. Miller brings up a good point. One thing I do want to mention in this context is, so there's efficiency benefits from reviewing them all at once, but then Lynn had mentioned shot clocks earlier, and so the if they were not to submit all the applications at once, the shot clocks would trigger upon submission of each application. And to kind of back up a little bit, shot clocks are a creation of federal law, and they say...
It's right before it's saying that, but that's best. What is a shot
clock? Well,
no,
I mean, it's kind of a crazy, it's a crazy situation. I have a cheat sheet that I gave to staff, actually, to help them, because there are so many different time frames. If this, then this. If a new application, then this shot clock. If a co-location, then this shot clock. If an eligible facilities modification, then this shot clock.
It's basically how quickly the staff has to process it.
Yes.
And suggest to process it X amount of times.
It's a new term in this body.
Yeah. And every stage along the way has X amount of time you have to process everything.
And it's triggered when the application is filed, not when it's complete, when it's filed. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the other side of the coin to think about.
So given the... Given the demands to our city of the current development requirements and reviews, would it be better then to have them individually so that we can comply and not set up the city for a lawsuit? Or are
the
we restricted?
The amount of time it takes to intake a project, an application, for, you know, every hands that it touches for 10 different applications versus one, I think it's more efficient to do it all at once.
Okay.
Do you agree with that?
So hearing that, does anybody on the commission want to change the may to a should?
I'll just throw in another comment just to bolster the case for the multiples. It may be a cost saving, but there's another savings in factors. If an applicant's coming in with 10 low-power, small proximity devices versus backup over the freeway with something that's a lot more powerful, I'm sure they're measuring that with the applications they're making. It's not just about providing service.
Mm-hmm.
You spend the same money for one versus 10 or 15. You'd rather have the smaller ones closer in, I expect.
Yeah. Mark, how are you doing?
And if I may backtrack a little bit to answer Mr. Von Trapp's earlier question about the redundancy in subsection C, I've re-reviewed the paragraph, and I believe we can tighten that language up. I do believe that you've hit on some redundancy here, and we can tighten that up to reduce that.
Thanks.
Okay, So, Commissioner Ryan, back to you. You talked about at the applicant's discretion. Do you think we ought to change the may, or are you happy as written?
I'm like to bring this to light. I'm satisfied with the discussion from the Sonora staff that it's no business to do it this way. I just want to make sure that we're, that we saw that, we considered it, and go forward with it. I just didn't want to get back.
Okay. Hearing that staff would prefer it as a group of documents instead of the individual handoff, would anybody like to make a change?
I mean, they'll still be making decisions individually on each site. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, it's just really it's an administrative thing to me. It's not like you. So if you put away all 10 at once, you got to say yes or no on all 10. It's not like that. So.
I've been in a position in my life where I've had documents handed to me by an industry representative, and oftentimes language acts like this is written by them to help them. I want to make sure that we aren't adopting language that we aren't aware of.
Yeah, I think it's valid. You know, that's why I'm respectful of what the demands are on our city and our staff, especially if I have my next request for them to work on. I don't want you over encumbered. Sorry.
I guess my concern, and you know, maybe I'm worrying about something I don't need to, would be, I mean, knowing how busy you guys are now, we know we have this shot clock, and when we encourage these things, I wouldn't want, you know, for lack of a better example, T-Mobile, or any provider to come in and suddenly, because of time constraints and because of what we're encouraging, you're forced to approve something, you know, in a way where it's not fully reviewed and doesn't really conform with our city, but we're getting the strong arm, basically, because of these rules. And I guess as I'm talking, I'm thinking we can probably prevent that by being really specific in what we want and where. But I wouldn't want some big company coming in.
You actually hit on a really good point. The best way to speed up these reviews is to have a clear code, where as a reviewer you can know exactly what the code's requesting out of you. Where it gets slow is when the codes are murky and you have to go check with the legal team for every intent on everyone, which we do every week on the intent of a lot of code. So cleaning them up, that's a good point.
So we should focus on
if we're specific, it really speeds up our review.
And so we need to be specific kind of the later part of this.
On the development standard, it would be a helpful slide to be very specific.
Good discussion. Okay. Anything else on page 20, 21? Commissioner Heller.
I just saw the permits on page 21, expire 10 years. So they're like, it's like a building permit or vested on whatever code we have at the time for 10 years. Like whatever standards.
We had talked about this actually, because normally in the planning area, you're not talking about a permit that expires, and this is again optional. Some cities do this, some cities don't, and then the siting is good for however long the facility lasts there. The policy reason that cities have expiration dates is to try to keep them up to date with whatever the development standards are. That's a way to sort of avoid vesting forever.
Yeah.
Or reverse vesting, I guess.
Is there an additional fee with each
yes.
period?
I mean, whatever
period.
The city, yeah.
So every 10 years, they're could change for the city. They're going to get a renewal fee.
Potentially.
But I guess 10 for me seems long, actually. Because when the building permit's 5.
Bless you.
I don't remember, but 10, I mean, I don't understand why they'd sit on it for 10 years. I mean, I could see like 2. I mean, do you want to get this thing done?
Are you talking about the time to construct or just the time? That's the permit time. If you look at subsection B, that's that you have to get this done. You got to get moving on this within a year or it expires.
Okay.
I think maybe it would be helpful to clarify that because that's the same question that I had when I was looking at this code for you is what is the permit? Because typically a permit to us is, here's your building permit, now go build your house. It's not your house can be there for 10 years and then you need to, so we're used to speaking in a different language. So maybe it could be something like operating permit or,
I would maybe put B in front of A too.
Right.
Like first you've got to get it, and first you have to install it within a year. Then you have 10 years to keep it there.
Mm-hmm.
Question. So
that is a good suggestion. Mm-hmm. That makes more sense to do it that way. If you want to switch B to A and then work on A. Yes, sir, Commissioner Ryan.
Thank you, Chair. Just to understand, permittee has a 10-year permit. Is that person, is that entity allowed to upgrade within that 10-year permit without applying for a new permit?
It depends. Mm-hmm. It depends on what they want to do.
So that's not talked about here. They have a 10-year permit, and they have to be settled with the technology they install for 10 years, or they can't upgrade.
Not exactly. That's where the eligible facilities modification ordinance is most likely going to come into play for most of your upgrades. The eligible facilities modification ordinance means that they can sub out equipment, add things to what's there within certain boundaries, and with that scheme, it's very tightly constricted by federal law, federal regulation. And so that's why it's a different ordinance is on those types of reviews. When we go through that, you'll see it's very technical and it's very prescriptive, and that comes almost verbatim from federal law. Whereas this ordinance is cafeteria style, the other one is almost a ministerial permit. Is if they can check this box, that box, this box, then staff has to say yes, okay,
modify. If the director. His discretion realizes that technology has improved to the extent that some of these sites can be withdrawn, and we retain the right to recommend certain sites be withdrawn if the capacity is being met. In other words, if we don't, if I think you're getting what I'm saying. If we have 10 sites permitted, but in 5 years you may not need 5 of those sites because the technology improved, do we have the right to have them removed?
I think after that 10 years when it expires, yes.
Well, and I think maybe the way to address that is through like an abandoned facilities clause or something like that. Most of the time they're not, a company isn't going to just leave stuff up that's not really in use.
But can we direct, but can we guide that?
Well, usually these sites are leased.
Mm-hmm.
And these are business people.
Yeah.
And they have lobbied, believe me, way beyond any considerations we got at the federal level. They've been all over this issue for a while. So I think if you think about how the market works, why would they lease sites they don't need?
Yeah.
And when technology comes, I mean, they'll just say, hey, we're not doing the lease, we don't need it anymore, we'll take it out. The other thing is, I think we need to be careful in the instance that technology makes them a little more intrusive and they get greater coverage or whatever. And so I think the business of the permit is just that if they're going to do something substantially the same, you really can't tell the difference, and it's a technology upgrade, great. But if they're going to put something up there that's, you know, doesn't walk and quack like the original duck, then you require them to get new permit.
So we've got that control.
So, Commissioner Ryan, if you allow me, Ms. Kiefer, you referred to an eligible modification something. I don't see that in our code. Is that something that we do have? I just need to find it somewhere.
Sure, it should be in your packet.
It's the second ordinance.
Second ordinance?
Okay.
Eligible facilities modification.
Can you refer to that section under A where all the conditions are so that way they know if you're doing this, yes, you don't need, but if you're doing these things, then you might need a new permit?
Sure.
We can absolutely write that in, no problem.
I think that would also help. And that way, answer their question.
Are C, D, E, and F on this one just pertinent to the more operating permit, not the building permit? And if so, can we then make them?
Yeah, it should say operating permit instead of building.
That.
Yeah, it should, and that would
differentiate between building permit and operating permit.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
understand your question. I mean, you would want assurances from them that they have the right to go onto that property, that they have the lease right, they've worked out essentially a deal with the landowner where they want to site the facility. Is that what you're asking? I mean, you can ask
for that. But even if it's not in the public right of way, we still can limit it to 10 years on private property.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a zoning, it's a siting permit is the way to think about it. It's kind of an on deck. It's a siting permit. You're good under our development regulations for this amount of time.
Interesting. Okay, page 22. Commissioner Heller first, then Mr. Ryan.
I'm already at the bottom. I was just curious on the selection of the parks on F, how those were chosen.
Oh, I actually erased these because I thought we should talk about it. I think that's a discussion you should have, is if you want to allow them in parks or not, because some parks, they may make sense. As it was mentioned, they can bring in revenue for the city and can be placed in an unobtrusive way on some parks if there's already the lighting out there. So I think that's a discussion you should have, is where you want to, which parks you want to allow them in. And you could consider not allowing monopoles in some of the parks, but allowing small cell facilities in them. Or, you know, you could look at a myriad of ways to put it together.
So the ways, like, ball fields was one, where there's lighting and already tall structures. So, I mean, I guess that makes sense to me if that's kind of the standard. Yeah, there's, and then I think, is there going to be some going in the toll gate there? But isn't there some, maybe some ball fields going in toll gate, or maybe not lighting?
I'm not aware of any ball fields or lighting going in at toll gate. They're leaning more towards passive recreation, okay. Agriculture uses.
I'm thinking the Miller property out there.
Oh, right. There is that private ball fields.
Well, there's that. I had seen on maybe it was an older master plan. Maybe it was soccer.
There might be. Know. I'm not.
There was the potential for a very small amount if we'll ever see it.
Okay. How about we do this? Ask staff to bring back the parks that have ball fields with lighting.
Yeah,
and then we can.
Ones that have natural. That's, you know, that's where we're different, I think, mm-hmm. our town, whereas a lot of other cities, everything's just ball field. That's the park.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you would be in favor of having them maybe on lighting at ball fields?
I haven't seen that, you know, to 100%, but.
Right.
It's probably kind of like pictures.
So here's a catch-22 with that. I believe in order to have the efficiency for the tower to work, it has to be a certain elevation. If it's an elevation where we might like it to keep from polluting the sky with light, which is a lower point, I'm just thinking this through. Maybe we can come up with something that says, on the occasion that there is a lighting fixture, that's where it's going to go, as opposed to leaving it open to have someone come out and say, well, we need to go here, and it needs to be this high.
So if your light is at 40 feet, and you could extend 10 feet above.
And it doesn't extend the light fixture.
Well, that's
the
thing.
It kind of puts a hat on top of it. Just
okay. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yes. A future eagle nest, yes.
Yeah.
I just, I can see this. I think the technology's there, probably getting close. If you think about going to a Mariners game or anything else, there's no towers. They're behind your head and all around, and everybody's able to talk on their cell phone and pull down YouTube and everything else. And there's 50,000 people there. So there's got to be a way, technologically, not to have towers all over the place. So the small cell's got to be the answer in my mind. And I just assume we start thinking of ways to have that be the way that we solve the problem rather than having towers on top of lights or whatever else to put something up into the view line.
Well, what about if we just have two? This would be going a little bit what I just said, but unless necessary to close a significant gap in coverage, WCS are prohibited in city parks. I don't know. I'm just, because it just got me thinking what you said was where would the best place be for these? You know, is that in the IC zone or something that's already heavily developed? Or, you know, where would we not, where would someone not care?
Well, where would you care the most? to have coverage.
The parks is not an area that I, you know, the reason I go to parks is to see a cell tower.
Not to see one, no, but to have coverage.
You know, the reason people do put them in parks is to play things, and that they mount them on them, and people don't really notice them. So it's not like you're going to go out there and put up a multi cell tower that is just standing out there on its own.
And, you know, we might be able to do this in such a way where we say that we don't want skyward towers or light poles, that we want inconspicuous and hidden and natural-looking enclosures so that it's not obvious to the public eye, and write the code in such a way that gives the staff and that person the leeway to develop whatever they want as long as it fits in that location. And so that's a way to get there. Sorry, Commissioner Ryan, you've been waiting.
No, this is a light bulb. If I was a kid on a baseball team, I would be aiming for those towers. That's my home run. That's my home run.
That's right.
That's right.
The hell with the fence. I'm going to work for the tower.
I think about the Tanner Landing in Dahlgren area, where there's supposedly going to be a kayak takeout point and a great place for cell service to be, because you're going to be calling for somebody to coordinate a car back to pick up your kayak, right? So that's the kind of thing that I'm thinking of, how they would be usable in remote locations.
And yet, at the same time, it's a beautiful view of the mountain that's unobstructed. Right. And so
I didn't say tower. I said service.
So, yeah, just considering both sides of that, right? Yeah. The need versus the need to camouflage, yeah, and make it discreet.
Well,
may I
in all honesty, what I'm thinking in my head, if we can build these rock walls that look exactly like a rock face, you tell me you can't take a mock of a cedar tree, and you can build a cedar tree that looks like a cedar tree and put your stuff inside it.
At what price?
They don't know how to make cedar tree blocks.
I've seen some. I saw one in Palo Alto.
Terrible.
Was supposed to be an evergreen.
Yeah.
And it was pretty easy to take it out.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. I have a feeling that because we call out refuges and things as non-use areas that we identify parks, because it would just seem to be that the toll gate, whatever, those all have a historical background to us. We're trying to identify. I have, what about Sideview Garden or other parks? You know, there's all kinds of parks around, but these were identified because they have some historical reference. So I'm okay with that. But I do have a comment under D, where they talk about building structures in a residential zone not used entirely for residential use. What is that supposed to mean?
Additional dwelling units? No, your sheds.
My shed.
Right?
Oh, that anticipates, I think, what is sometimes called live-work units. I don't know if you guys have any of those where you might have an office in front and then a residence in the back for small businesses.
Yeah.
Sometimes like a...
That's like finding a needle in a haystack, that situation. And like,
sure,
right at the end of that sense, what all Mike's talking about, there's a vacant lot right in the residential community. I think that the residential zones should be revoked. Not trying to find individual spots if you're that tight for it.
Yeah. I mean, this is structure. I would urge a little bit of caution here. For the most part, you can do almost anything you want with regard to new locations, except for, unless necessary, to close a significant gap in coverage. I know Lynn and I talked extensively about whether or not it was legally safe for the city to flat out prohibit wireless facilities in the residential zones, and the answer is it depends. But if a service provider can show that it needs to close a significant gap in its coverage, not in coverage over the whole city, but in its coverage, and that the only way to do it is in the residential zone, the city could have a problem with federal law in that perspective. So I would just urge you, well, you've essentially prohibited, you have made a prohibition on the provision of wireless services contrary to federal law.
I have to pay for a certain TV signal I want to watch. I can't watch everything that's transmitted.
I know it.
So
no.
biggest one.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, that's the thing, is that the city's hands are more tied than I would prefer. But nobody asked you.
Shall we return to the Growth Management Act?
But, so I would urge you, so the answer to this is, or one of the suggestions is, and there's lots of different ways to slice it, is the way that this is presented to you now is to give them a prioritization scheme where you say, staff really, the city really encourages you to be at this place first, then if none of that's available, then you go here. Then if none of that's available, then you go here. And so that's why you see residential isn't down until the fourth item, D. So you'll see the first priority here is co-location. Go where somebody else is. Okay, if they're all full and you can't do that, then go to city-owned structures, because then that way the city gets the revenue. Okay, that's all full. None of that will work for them. Then they go to ID or commercial zones. And if none of that will work, then they end up in residential. And I feel like that's probably unlikely. It's just this is such a fact-specific scenario. I wanted the city to be able to react and have different options. But again, this is a legislative option, and you can slice and dice this different ways.
So,
because you could also do like permitted in some zones, cups in other zones, you could do that.
I would rather the planning commission recommend against it.
I also had policy. I did not finish law school. But I'll throw this out. If we somehow in soft language prohibit it in our code, doesn't that force this, whoever they are, to go down the chain that we just went down the litany there? And their only choice after that is to file a suit, which we have to address, rather than basically make them prove that they can't use the other three, and then they get the residential by default.
That would make this easier for staff.
Well, no, but I think you would. They wouldn't come to you and say, "Here's a lawsuit," unless you go. Let us into the residential zone.
Right.
And as a city, and our folks living in residential zones, I'll guarantee you, the folks who live here would rather us have to defend a suit than to have it already in our code, because they can just do it if they can prove they can't get it anywhere else. I'm not trying to debate it with you. I'm just thinking like they're probably going to think if all of a sudden a tower gets put up in their neighbor's yard.
Yeah. I'm just here to advise. So you guys are the you guys are the planning commission. You guys.
So if you want to make a change, you have the floor.
There's more pieces that I don't know the answer to. It's hard to, I don't think we're talking about towers anymore. I think the technology's changed where the concept of putting up a monopole tower anywhere in the flat ground is probably not going to happen unless it's along a freeway when they need a 15-mile shot to something. But again, I'm back to this technological piece. I don't know enough.
Right. So, Jim, I did spend a lot of time talking with Eileen about that because I had the same thought, was can we prohibit them in residential zones, because I suspected that was something that citizens may look at. What we did end up doing, and maybe this will work for you or maybe not, maybe you want to change this, but under the development standards, we talked about monopoles in city residential zones are not to exceed 40 feet in height. The typical height limit, and that's one thing to note, is these can go taller than our height limits. The height limits in residential is 35 for the most part, except for if it's a floodplain, some other things. And then unless additional height is demonstrated to be technically necessary to close a significant gap. Maybe another option would be you could look at prohibiting monopoles in residential and just allowing microcell facilities.
I think it's more about the average mom with kids in her backyard realizing right across the street or in the neighbor's backyard is this device sending a signal through their house. I don't care how high it is. In fact, the higher it might be, the better. But that's the thing that goes in my head when you talk about a residential zone. Those are places where people live and sleep at night, at least 8 hours every day. Let's not nuke them while they're sleeping.
But there's also people who live in Wood River on larger lots that might not get a service from their cell provider and be offered a chance to put a dish on their house, right? And thereby boosting their service and service for their neighbors. So, at what point do you draw the line?
I'm not sure we're going to answer that tonight. I'm just trying to throw it out there.
Can I make a motion?
Yes, sir.
A motion that we
170.120. Everything in D up to WSC-1.
Okay. The motion is to strike point D, buildings and structures in residential zones not used entirely for residential use, provided that WFCs will not be sited on vacant residential lots. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second by Commissioner Lucky. Discussion.
Is that enough? We're eliminating it. We're not allowing it to happen in vacant residential lots. We're not allowing it to be on residential, on partly used house, basically. That partly used house is a residential area. I'm getting out of there.
Mm-hmm. The way I read this is that not used entirely for residential use. So if you have a lot that's a business and maybe you live there, you know, it's not a pure residential low LDR zone. And so I don't see the scenario that...
But it would be a residential zone, regardless of the density. If you have a residence, it's in the residential zone.
It would be more in downtown core. Right.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. The downtown core provides for these devices to be installed.
Yeah. What's your goal? Can you explain? Sorry.
The goal is to get it away from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal.
So you were thinking it could go on a commercial building that's in a residential zone?
Yeah. But no. No. I'm not.
So completely out of residential zones?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we've lived in for residential zones, including a vacant lot. Why do we put it on a partially used zone, like there's a house in a garage somewhere? If we're not going to have a vacant lot, why would we allow it on the top of a garage? That's not being used. That doesn't make sense.
I guess
because I'm recommending it because I'd like to have the city council make the decision, not here. They can look at it. They can put it back in. I'm just saying we're recommending that's not a proper use.
Commissioner Von Trapp.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Why don't you want them? I mean, if they're hurt, question for you, what's the concern with having a residential?
Because as you've talked about, these things will be outside.
Okay.
You know, I don't want people looking at the baseball game and looking at a tower outside my backyard. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I don't want it front and outside. I've got a beautiful view of the outside. I don't want it blocked.
Yeah.
So it's a quality of life issue for me, so get it out of there. Anywhere. Our residential zones are not that immense that there's a business where they can't connect from some other site, right?
Would it change? I mean, some of the pictures, I couldn't even see it, right? And so if the technology was such that it was completely unnoticeable, would that change your perception? I was wondering if it was more for the aesthetic or if it's potential health concern as you're kind of getting at. I don't know what the science behind that.
Years ago, I'd be worried about the health issue. I think these are not a health issue.
Yeah.
But I am saying that these become this kind of device. Clearly, they're in our life. They're in our all around us. But we can move them around the way they're not in our neighborhood. And it's not, I'm talking about people who live in residential zones. Maybe not apartment areas where it's high rises kind of thing. They live with the effects of these things. They live around a lot of noise anyway, with light and glare. They can accept the cold. But in a quiet neighborhood like Sideview, to install one of these devices where it could be put somewhere in a shopping mall right next to Sideview, I would encourage that use. And I'm saying is, if this is bigger than a bed box, then I think it's the council's choice to add it back in. I'm not going to recommend it. I would not want to recommend it to the council. I'd like to have them make the choice to add it in under the advice of the attorney.
Commissioner Heller or Commissioner? Oh, sorry.
Well, just to kind of continue that thought, the thought that I'm having, if you don't mind, is my concern. I fully agree with that. And we're surrounded by county. And county restrictions on this are a lot different from ours. So if we make, I guess my concern would become, if we make it so restrictive that that's going to push them outside into the county area where we, you know, where it's still going to have that impact and be incredibly unsightly, I would want to make it more attractive to have it within the city so they play by our rules instead of going to our perimeter and ruining things. And, you know, and I just speak from experience with a friend who lives in county land and they sited a cell tower right next to it. Mm-hmm. Because that's what the property owner wanted, and they were looking for lease revenue, and there was nothing he could do about it. And just knowing where we are, that could happen.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Okay. Commissioner Miller or Commissioner Heller, anything to add?
Let's see, is there any... So if T-Mobile came to us with a proposition of building... is there a limitation how many they can build? What are the parameters there? How many can be built?
It depends. I mean, typically the city's not going to regulate how many they can build. And
that's,
I mean, I presume you mean standalone,
yeah,
as opposed to antennas, because a lot of times they can be co-located and you have multiple,
right,
facilities in one tower. It's this squishy standard of what they need to close significant gaps in the coverage. Cities,
okay,
can do just about anything they want as long as they don't prohibit someone from closing a significant gap in their coverage.
Okay.
That's true. And it's, unfortunately, it's very fact-intensive analysis. It's a case-by-case thing. I'd love to be able to give you a bright line of 30 is your number.
Right.
It doesn't exist in federal law.
Okay. Well, that, thank you for that.
There's a third piece, so we've talked about aesthetics. I'm thinking about whether it's just perceived or real, the mom in the backyard thing I mentioned. And then there's another piece which is, I think, is really easy to read. If this facility sat in and around a particular house, the property value of that house and two or three others in line would be decreased. So not increased because they've all of a sudden got service they didn't have. I think that's another piece of the puzzle that, if we're thinking about our citizens, another reason to say no. And I don't know if you take a friendly amendment to your motion, but I'm proposing adding under E, the next one down, adding language that says including residential zones. So it's actually prohibited.
That actually is out of order. It wouldn't be an amendment to his motion.
We'll get there eventually.
Yeah. Any further comment or discussion?
Just to recap, you know, it looks like A, B, and C are really the three options if we are, and, you know, I guess there's D in there where it can be commercial and residential. So you have, I mean, once I realized that the tiered effect was there, that actually made me more comfortable. I don't know how far people go, quickly people run through the list. E and F aren't really an option because those are just listing prohibitions. If we had residential, that'd be another one. Almost those could go up, kind of, to the top. Because the way it's listed is locating highest priority. So I'm comfortable without any problem, which is sometimes to add what Tick is saying with A, B, and C, because that isn't residential. So that gives them three options. I mean, is three enough? You know? I mean, it's better than none. Better than one.
Commissioner Ryan, hold on.
B apart stays.
So I'm just going to say that the way I read it, buildings and structures in residential zones not used entirely for residential use mean it's not going to be a pure residential structure, and so it will void out most areas that I think are the concern. But I also feel that if I'm in my home and I'm paying for coverage that I'm not getting, I would want that coverage to reach me, and if the company is trying to make that effort and they find a business location that's close to my residential zone, I'm in favor of that. right? So with that, any further comments or thoughts? The motion before you is to strike point D, buildings and structures in residential zones not used entirely for residential use, provided that WFCs will not be sited on vacant residential lots. All those in favor say aye.
That's not the motion.
Sorry.
The motion is to strike all before WCFs.
So it would just read WCFs shall not be sited on vacant
right.
residential lots?
Yeah.
Restating, so to strike buildings and structures in residential zones not used entirely for residential use provided.
So
comma.
This would still allow them on occupied residential lots if you are trying to get them completely out of residential zones. Then we should reword it.
It's already co-location could also be in residential.
Right, just so everyone's clear
so
what
this. I can see that. I just think that this D, the first part of D up to WCFs, is not necessary. Because
yeah.
you already have the right to locate residential under A.
So
I'm just saying, get it.
Did the Planning Commission understand what the staff is saying, that by taking out this section, we're going to allow it in all residential zones except vacant lots? By that motion. So with that, we'll call the question. All those in favor of striking buildings and structures in residential zones not used entirely for residential use provided, comma, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Say nay.
That's a good start. I'm fine with it so far.
I said aye.
Okay, so I have three ayes and I have three noes. The motion fails. Okay. Commissioner Lucky, would you like to make a motion?
So I move we strike item B in its entirety.
Okay.
As a potential option for the new facility. And in addition, and I'll clean this up in a second. And in addition, I'd like to add, insert the words in residential zones for item E as a prohibition.
And I'm just tracking it so you can see what it looks like. This doesn't mean they're meaning, obviously. So adding and residential zones into this list of prohibited.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Lynn, if it's easier because we've got a unique F here. Is it logistically better to put my comment in F? I'm trying to think of where we're going. That's something you're adding here specific to us in the county or in the city.
It might be clearer for staff when reading this if it's its own subsection, because when you have to read through paragraphs, sometimes it's easier when it just stands out, especially something as important as that.
So, yeah, I think you would want to just insert a line just says that WOCs are not permitted in residential zones and just make it clear and simple.
Just substitute it for D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm in for that.
Mm-hmm. Strike the words and replace with
yep.
WOCs are not permitted.
But the paragraph 1870 here is talking about the order of things, right? So
right.
If we don't have a comment about residential zone, isn't it then assumed it's not in the order of things?
No, it needs to be stated, I think.
Okay.
To be clear.
So my thought is strike D, and whatever F becomes,
mm-hmm.
it includes
right.
residential
zones.
It
seems like we're still working on that one.
Right.
So
I think at the recommendation of staff, they're saying it's better to create a line that says WCs are not permitted in residential zones.
And to be clear, when you say residential zones, what I hear is that's our low-density residential, which is the yellow, the cottage residential, the orange, the CLDR, and the HDR. Is it allowed some? But it's still residential use
mm-hmm.
and HDR. So
an HDR building would be excluded.
So
do you want
to
just
be
zone specific?
No, that's residential. Because of the context, because we're saying you've got three choices before you need to get in the residential zone.
Okay.
And here's my some other back logic is.
Hold on. Your motion is to strike D, and replace with WFCs are not permitted in residential zones, CLDR, LDR, cottage, and HDR zones. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second by Commissioner Ryan. Discussion, Commissioner Lucky.
I was just going to add to the belief that this works is because a sophisticated company that does this for a living, when they see there are three choices, they're looking at the cost benefit. If there's not a fourth choice that's probably cheaper, they're going to figure out a way to get the first three. So I get the language of how this co-locate is the first choice. If they can't figure it out there, it just means they haven't spent enough money, right? They haven't paid for the tower, or they haven't done something to make it fit. So it's not about possibility. It's about the least expensive scenario, and I don't want residential to end up being the least expensive scenario.
Yeah.
Well said. I support his comments.
Okay. Anyone speaking against? Would you accept an amendment to remove HDR? Because with a blended commercial and residential, you might have a good location for those residents to get service throughout their building and throughout their building sections as we're splitting them up to lessen the impact. So it would allow that provider to reach all their customers there.
I would say no, because there are more families with their heads on the pillow in HDR than any other residential zone.
Okay, you're thinking about it from a risk.
Among other factors.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to be sleeping next to it.
Okay. Is there any further discussion?
I'd like to take it for or against. First question would be to staff. Is there precedence in certain cities that have done this? Do you feel aware of?
Mercer Island. I think Mercer Island does, but this is just in the back of my brain recollection, so I could be wrong on that. Most do not have residential centers. Because of federal law restrictions. So what most cities do is either do this prioritization scheme that you see in your draft ordinance, or do permitted or in certain places.
So I think that's my question to the commission. Are we going rogue? Is it a reasonable thing? And then also, just looking at it from a practical standpoint, I mean, I think the first three options seem fairly like good options. But then just to kind of go back to my point from before, you have a county with great views of Mount Si here. So if somebody wants to come into Silver Creek, we've said no. Okay, that's fine. We're going to push this landowner right here, and we're going to build a monopole that's super high, because we can. We wanted to put it here, but you said no. Or in this area, which is county, I mean, are we pushing them to our fringes? And it's going to backfire on us. So
usually it'd be Jim that would say something like that.
I'm going to respect your time because I love this conversation. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely, you're pushing one way or the other. And my default, it's an easy one for me. If I think Bob and Sally Smith, who live in a neighborhood, realize that we sat here tonight and said, sure, put it in my backyard, they'd lose their minds. Because we did it so easily. Because the federal law required it to. Well, nobody's looked at the city of North Bend when they wrote the federal decisions they made. So it's our job to say, it makes sense for us or it doesn't make sense for us. And if there's some ramifications that come out of it, you know, cowboys call us one afternoon and say, you know, if you don't change this, we have to address it. We come back to the citizens. City council say, hey, here's what's coming. Let's figure this out. Rather than, sure, come on in. So I'm really thinking that from your backyard, your neighbor's backyard, property values, kids sleeping at night, what people really believe out there, no matter what the science says. So it's not a hard call for me to make this kind of pull back on it.
I think that's a good point that I hadn't thought of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. you know, I think it's okay to be different here because we are on, you know, the edge of civilization development here, and, you know, we can do things different. We're still a small town, and everywhere else is built out. Let them be built out. Let them be that way as we have to. So if we do things different, then that's fine. We should. But I think given the three options, is I don't know. It could come back, and you know, I feel like on a lot of these things, like something that Gary's brought up about HDR, thinking ahead of the Growth Management Act, I don't really agree with that. And in this case, you know, we're thinking ahead to something that may or may not happen, and that's always difficult. Because, you know, you're changing the present for a possibility of something in the future. You know, it's just
but it'll come back again, right?
It could come back
today's
again. We can address it if and when that does happen. Yeah. And, if we have to add that in, we're mandated to, then sure, we'll do that.
We're admitting one right now. That's what we're doing here.
Commissioner Miller, do you have anything to add?
Well, this is so fascinating, by the way. I see the aesthetic potential disasters, and I see also the potential of things changing in the forefront of what's coming. We don't even know yet fully. So I would like to see things not be impeded. Our view of our mountain, our exquisite area, very unique area. There's only one other mountain that emulates Mount Sinai. It's in Italy. I don't know if you all know that, a town in Italy. It almost looks exact to our mountain. So there's a great presence we have here, and we need to respect that. We need to be, but we need to always be conscious of that. So height, awareness, what the potential medical issues that may or may not be, a part of focus. These are big things to think about and not easily to be just judged and thrown out there. So it's kind of a big decision, and it could be 25 years, 20 years down the road and things change, but we need to always be respectful of our community and the people here. And residential, I'm not so keen on having it in residential at all, personally.
Okay. So the motion is that WFCs are not permitted in the residential zones CLDR, LDR, cottage, and HDR. Any further comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Motion approves. It's 4-2.
Did we strike D in there too? Or is it already done?
Sorry, striking D and replacing with. Yes. Should have been. Okay. I would like to insert.
Gary, one thing to think about
yes.
time. If we want to try to get through, we're not going to probably get through all this tonight. So you'd ask for time limits, and we put them on here. And if you want to try and talk about the next one, amendments to permit a land use chart,
not
it's
yet.
Up to you guys.
Okay. Finish this page at least. Okay. I'd like the Planning Commission to consider the following additional locations for not being approved for siting. So my thoughts were public and private utilities of providing services to our residents must do so while respecting our views, our wilderness areas, and natural environment. Therefore, all rooftop siting must be enclosed in a matching facade. No rooftop or poles WFC should be located on the north side of North Bend Way in order to protect Mount Si views. I'd also like the commission to consider not permitting North Bend Way south side from Bendigo to southeast North Bend Way and southeast 140th Street, exit 31 from North Bend Boulevard north at Rybury Way to 2nd Street, exit 32 from Cedar Falls Road southeast 436th Avenue and Mount Si Road, exit 34, 468th Avenue southeast from southeast 159th Street to southeast 140th. It's pretty much our three exits and our three gateways of how you're going to enter the city and where we do not want to see either our views obstructed or a tower welcoming people to us. Any thoughts?
I support that.
I think it's all over the world. follow-up. I thought you made a comment about maybe having specific looks and colors and things. I guess I would be more interested in that than getting quite that specific. Not that I... Because, yeah. I mean, if we start doing all of that, then Curtis is right.
I'm not saying that they're not permitted in downtown, but they would have to be on the south side of the street, and they would have to have a matching facade, right? So you would build up around that structure on top of the building, so it would blend in more. That's I'm not saying no. I'm saying here's where in that case, but yeah, I don't know if you could give us like a map in the next meeting that shows all of those locations, but for the Planning Commission to consider.
Would you just, by since you have that, did you read the exit 31 description again?
Rybury Way, all the way down to 2nd Avenue.
Okay. Thanks.
I did one thing, this is just a comment that's difficult about this process, is that everything has a public, which that's just the way we do things, but if you could have emailed that out and I could have time to review it just on the spot like that, it's difficult.
Oh, yeah.
That's just how it is.
And we don't have to have everything a motion in this point of it where we can do it all at the end. And so what I'll have is the staff to bring, you know, give us like an illustrative map or something where you can visualize it, if that's possible. So you could just do a North Bend map and say, in these sections, here's where I'm going with it. So you would take out all LDR zones, you would take out these sections, and you would see where we're left with coverage areas, and then we can think about if we've done the right thing or if we're going to end up with a problem. I think that's where I'm going with it.
We can bring back a visual, whether it's going to be
circles on a map.
We don't have very much GIS staff time who would do the map that I think you really have a vision that blacks out the zones that we just talked about. It only shows exactly. But we can bring back a visual for this.
Yeah, or just take the zoning map and line it out with black lines or something.
We can bring you a visual that would show what you're proposing.
Okay. That would be helpful.
That would be helpful.
So the next thing is development standards. And is it possible to bring up the slides? And can I get my notes? I work off of visual things, and I can't write code that matches pictures. I don't know how well you guys can, but this is going to be the challenge. So, are we at slide 8?
This is slide 8.
Okay. So, to me, the illustration is best where that person is. I don't know if you can go full screen.
Look closely, because I don't know. I don't have internet anymore, so I don't know if it'll... Oh, it works.
Yay.
Thanks.
Okay. So, while the pole, it looks pretty inconspicuous and it blends in, it's not bad. It's a good combination of, I think, one of the better combinations how it could look on a light pole. But yet, when you put a person by it, it certainly is big up top. And would that just look, you know, is there a better way to do it, I guess, is what I want us to think about.
Need a lot taller person.
Yeah. Let's say she's 5'6".
But what I appreciate about that is that he does it. If there's smaller poles bundled around all of that, I'd rather have them bundled in case.
So can you go to slide 48? So, yeah, that to me just looks, you know, obvious, and you might as well put it anywhere, right? It's just sticking a box on something.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go back to 46? Sorry. There you go. This is something else where I'm thinking we don't want to encourage is the box and the wires. To me, it looks half done, so... I think the requirement is wires enclosed. The boxes at the bottom is what we have right now. So I kind of support what's written in that light, to think of it that way. And then...
Are all of those devices even below the below the red? Is that other antenna device? That's some other structure?
It's part of it.
Part of a bundle?
Yeah, they could be.
Mm-hmm. Then even on top of the red, on top of the, where the light comes out, is that also on the street?
Yeah, there could be power meters, generators, you know, transmitters. So there's a whole bunch of infrastructure that goes along with them.
And what do we know, staff, about if you have that in your city, how many more of those do you have in your city? I mean, do you have one block? Do you have one every five blocks? What's the density of something like that?
Well, it just depends on who's going to co-locate and where they can get in and to provide their service.
50-mile radius, that is so hideous.
Yes, it is. It's horrible. That's why I think it's helpful to look, right? Okay, slide 55. So here is something where, you know, it's not too bad. It looks like Mickey Mouse ears. We could do a fine Mickey in North Bend.
When we used to have atomic alert sirens around the city, that's exactly what it looks like. We got used to those pretty quick.
Yeah. So to me, that keeps the integrity of the pole. It doesn't look so large, you know, and it is what it is. So I think that one...
I think I'd notice that unless somebody was like, hey, that's what that is.
Yeah. Okay, and slide 66. Just say no. Okay, anybody? All right. The next presentation, the wireless small cell challenges, slide 18. That or that, I would choose the left. Side that.
Well, left side has nothing on it, right?
Well, it's hard to see. Yeah, it's on the bottom and it's on the top.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought that was just regular pole, and that's how it looked on the right.
Yeah. So I think that's another good one that we could look at as an example for our. Here's what we desire. If we can put pictures in, that would be helpful. Slide 24. I don't know how this would come in, especially now that we've redone our downtown and we were just laying that concrete after the strike, but that's also something, is it considered for us or not, to allow them to just do the micro channel and run fiber along the sidewalk as a way to get a signal in?
I think it's allowed. I believe that the, and I checked it from the reference, I believe that the underground is encouraged where feasible. It's not always technologically feasible, but I believe that it's somewhere in your traffic needs. If I can figure out the correct.
And I think we have, don't we have a requirement for conduit, communication conduit, under those, as roads are reduced?
Mm-hmm.
We have an underground requirement where if it's X amount of frontage is being improved, it has to be undergrounded.
Well, but if in other words, let's say an area that they're not lines coming at each other, but isn't a conduit, has to be in place, make it conduit.
Let me answer that. But they have to put it down for future use? Or
we're doing that with our improvements here for
right.
When we do underground, but I'm not sure about the...
Because that's a great example of why, if there's conduit, nobody's drilling through the new concrete we just poured.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have to check Public Works and... That type, if that was envisioned for here, or it already exists. Yeah.
And I would direct the commission to look at proposed North Bend Municipal Code 18.70.130 development standards. Letter D, equipment facilities shall be placed on the ground if practical or.
Always love language like that. If it's practical, well, the onus is on the company who wants to do it in to prove that it's not,
right.
Whichever benefits them the most.
So, to me, matching our building facades would be just that. It's matching a building facade if that's what we're going to permit on top of a building or on the side of the building. You know, some of those were just the markers. Any thoughts?
Like, what is that called, and are we going to put, like, that type in the code, or how?
So. Right, you wouldn't call it a two MRRUs?
Yeah.
To me, that would be an allowance.
Depends on how big it is. I mean, it could be called an antenna. I mean, it could be a small cell, it could be a microcell. It just depends on the size.
Well, here's where I get to that 17 cubic feet that we were talking about. Is, you know, if we can find out what that is in about size, then we can say in about size as an attachment onto an existing light pole without extending the height. We can be that kind of guiding.
Right. And this is where we get back to eligible facilities modification. And we'll get to that draft ordinance at some point. But just bear in mind that these things can get taller and they can get fatter in a very ministerial way. Staff has a 60-day shot clock on those to permit those. It's a deemed granted application if you missed your deadline on that for eligible facilities modification. It depends on what the structure is. It can go up to even 20 feet taller than what it is. It can't defeat your concealment, so that's something to bear in mind. But just know that what you start with may not be what you end up with because of federal law.
Wow.
Where do our design standards that we've got already, when do they kick in? There's this discussion.
Well, currently, our design standards don't address this. We don't have, like I said, they're in the conditional use permit, and nothing directs you to that. And there's some limited ones under your performance standards that are in the memo, but the goal is that you're creating the design standards that are going to kick in.
And what's our timeline again? No, there's a moratorium, you said, but what's
the
real?
The moratorium's up in December, October. I was hopeful.
Two meetings.
Oh, what's your timeline? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be ideal, is if you spend two meetings on this. But if you need more time, we can take more time, and we can renew the moratorium if we have to do that.
Are there companies?
Yep, there's.
Okay.
And I don't know if they're going to submit an application the second, but they're just waiting to see if it's feasible for them or not. But there's two companies that have been looking for the ordinances.
Does the moratorium protect the shot clock conversation here?
No. The moratorium, they cannot submit an application. So it does protect us because they can't submit the application.
But if your moratorium runs out, that's the thing though, if there's any gap or if there was anything pending. When you have your moratorium, it doesn't stop the shot clock, unfortunately.
And tell me again the penalty that relates to the shot clock?
So it depends. Unduly complicated. So if it's a brand new facility or a co-location, they take you to court. If you bust your deadline, there's 150 days for a brand new facility, 90 days for co-location. If you bust it on that end, they take you to court. If it's an eligible facilities modification, that's the 60-day shot clock, it is deemed granted. So T-Mobile or whoever it is, I feel like we're picking on T-Mobile, they would submit something to staff that says, you missed your 60 days, this is deemed granted, we're putting it up.
I'm guessing that's where a lot of this clustered photograph you've seen came from.
Yeah. In a way, doesn't it seem like this legislation was written so somebody could just go out and sue cities?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there's some experts in that area.
Oh. I feel like this discussion is kind of reminiscent of others, and I feel like we've accomplished our goals, you know, not with being specific, but with the language that we've chosen, best available technology, blending in with the scenery with a certain size limit. And I'm wondering, shouldn't that be what we're doing right now?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I don't know how specific that the commission wants to be or how visual that everybody was with the slides that were there. So I want to make sure that everybody has a clear picture in the mind of what we can and should have, I guess.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of it, a lot of expertise that I'm missing. It's kind of like you want to design the perfect car, but you don't know whether it's going to have a gas or an electric motor, and how big is the freeway. I don't know where to go. So part of me's thinking maybe we do something like give the council notice that we need design standards in order to really deal with this. Because that's what it's all about. It's what you see.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by design standards? Because the design standards for these you're creating.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And we're not going to do that by October. I don't see it happening.
We got one more meeting in September.
Tell council
but
that you're
just
going to
if we give the council a heads up right now that that's going to be the thing that needs to be, maybe they're going to do their own special meeting and bring in the experts or however that's going to happen.
As of right now, that's not. There's not a plan to do a special meeting. You know, there's a lot of other. This isn't the only moratorium
we have. Low hanging fruit.
So this is. We're kind of trying to take this one through the planning commission, then we'll go to city council. I suspect you'll spend much more time on it than city council does, and they'll take your recommendation and they might have a few things to add. But
even lately, I've not been taking our recommendations.
Yeah, maybe what you want to do is you make a lot of progress. Tell them how far you've got and say, you know, we're getting there. We need whatever period of time you think for design standards that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, you're almost done. And just ask for whatever time period you think you need. You need 6 more months, do it.
Where are we with housing?
Hold on. Separate question. So, Commissioner Von Trapp made a good point, is that we have some good language in here, and you wanted to know, are we pretty accurate what we have? Your concern is that we don't really know how big and how many, so it's really hard to say if that's right or not.
I'd actually go so far as to say it's reckless for us to go down the design standards roads. We don't know we're designing.
So, do we have any sample permits that other cities have done that will be willing to share with us to understand the scope and size? And
I don't have it, but we could reach out and see if we get one. It would be helpful to have a little more direction what you're looking for.
Are you looking for micro facilities or for pole facilities or both?
I think the exhibits that you just brought up make the case that those choices were made by highly intelligent folks, and it looks terrible, not acceptable to what I'm hearing everybody say here. So how do we create language that makes it not happen? And what I've learned so far, tell you I understand what I should be saying, how big's the box and how high is the box and what does it look like?
Well, I want to know, does it matter? Because if your concern is that you don't want to see it or notice it, so that means it should be inconspicuous. It shouldn't be in a residential zone, and it should blend in with the current architecture of the town or that building.
That's probably great surface language, but
it starts.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if I really don't want to drag it out, but I feel like if we're going to have some input into what actually comes at the final day, the language needs to be more than it blends in. Because the towers that we all talk about blend in with the trees. Well, actually, they don't, right?
Well, I feel like it's a judgment call.
Right.
So many people that blends in.
Right.
It's that big, bulky thing hanging out.
That's right.
And
you could always adopt some guidelines that use these visuals as well.
Sure.
I think it would be interesting to find out if other communities have developed some pretty rigorous standards. They've already been beaten up by the industry.
Yes.
And this works and this doesn't. And why do we have to do it? Let's try to find out what people have done.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I think Eileen's put together here is some best industry practices.
Mm-hmm.
And spent a lot of time actually looking at other communities. One of the problems are you can't guess every single facility that's going to go in.
Right.
You know, we found a couple images, but there's a million others that we could show you.
Yeah. I mean, that piece would be really helpful if we could go to a particular municipality that has gone through this exercise 10 years ago based on their growth, right? I'm thinking of any place that's got views of something, they probably had to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. I know one said San Francisco Bayview was.
Bayview?
Yeah, the San Francisco Bayview in the first presentation. I don't know. The city of San Francisco has some pretty in-depth code.
My comment, thanks for putting it together, what we have here, and I think we'll just need to take a look at it a little more. I think the similarity to this is, when we get into some of the architecture things, for me, getting into that minutia of talking about that kind of stuff, what do? You guys contact a landscape architect, right? Mm-hmm. Consulted on before. And so that's where this may apply as well. Or we check in with Mercer Island, like you said, and see what they have. But I don't know. I Gary's point of generalized standards, I agree with. But it's difficult to come up with these things when we're not experts in this area.
I'm not sure I'm that convinced to reflect that I align myself with Mr. Lockheed. It's just a curious and honest display of frustration, not understanding the technology, not to talk about it, informatively. Our feelings are that we want to avoid the aesthetics that were being shown by some of those really inappropriate designs in an attempt to persuade us otherwise a better way. Yeah, I guess you can find a better one than that and accept it. But the idea is we're not sure what we're choosing, and if we go down the right path, I think that displays enough caution on the commission to ask the extension of moratorium unless we get some really important information we can act upon.
Yeah, I appreciate what you say and what Commissioner Lucky says. I guess I don't want to be so far off from, I think, where we actually are. I think we do have a good basis to start from. I think we have some good examples. I do agree with getting some code from some cities and seeing what they've done to help enhance and help us think of things we're not considering. I think that's all relevant. I just don't want to keep pushing things
We're on the second to the last page of the thing, so we've done a lot of work tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just saying that it's hard to find closure when we don't really see what the shape of this project is. And we don't know what questions to ask. I'm in that same boat. Mm-hmm. I've got just a couple of quick comments in the last couple of pages.
Okay. Page 23. Commissioner Ryan.
On 25.
Okay.
I have a 24. On landscape requirements on 25, is it good to maintain those landscapes? Is that a city function or the function of
it? It would be a function of the property. It's a private function, it's not a city function. There, for landscaping requirements, there typically we have like a 2-year bond to make sure that in 2 years not all the vegetation has died, and they're required to water it for either provide irrigation or temporary 2-year watering so they don't die. And we also require native drought tolerance. So this would kick us back to our landscape code, which addresses all of those. So we're not trying to rewrite the landscape code on it.
On page 26, why is the wood enforcement wiped out? What does that mean your place?
I think there was two things. I think at one point it was redundant, and there was two of them. And then,
yes, permit enforcement was duplicative.
Where the other one? It's earlier in the text.
And then we also, I think, if I remember, I removed some of the language and then referred to the permit enforcement.
So I must have seen it. That was good. This I couldn't figure out why.
Just a curious question, because this caught my attention too. So how is it that our code or the municipality's code could tell the court what they're going to do? Because this reads, the court shall impose a fine, et cetera, several times. I'm just curious, how does that fly?
Well, they would adhere to our municipal code.
Yeah, it's the same thing as 150, the permit enforcement that's been crossed out.
Right, so I wonder if we go back to where we removed...
On page 22?
We removed 6. The court references because it's not applicable in our...
Right. Would have been jurisdiction.
You didn't copy and put it somewhere else is what I'm asking.
It's a good question. I can go look and make
sure. Yeah.
Where's the permit?
Yeah,
I
did have a copy.
I don't think your court would be pleased if you came in and tell them what you're going to do.
And so we just, staff and I just didn't catch that before we went to you guys.
Yeah.
When I say Meadowbrook Park, is that the Meadowbrook Park?
Meadowbrook Park, right.
So that's called by the city of Meadowbrook, it's not called it. Do they agree with this condition?
It would only apply in our jurisdiction.
So should we say that?
Only in our city limits, so it wouldn't apply to Snoqualmie city limits.
Yeah. But for the uninformed reader.
Commissioner Ryan, the permanent enforcement is in proposed North Bend Municipal Code 18.70-110. I apologize, I don't have your numbers. I'm looking for my own copy. But it does include the references to municipal court. Those should rather say it would go through the city's code enforcement. That's what that refers to, is that your code enforcement officer could issue citations.
Or the fine shall be.
Mm-hmm. That would work.
I see it. Greatly reduced. Language has been dreadfully reduced.
Yeah.
The 7 or 10 rather less text to run.
For the permit enforcement, it's because we have a code already addressing it all, so we don't want to, in each section, have a different permit enforcement or a different landscaping or anything, so we try and reference back to. Because otherwise, every time you update it, you have to directly look at different sections.
Yeah.
The project's still going on, is it?
What's that?
That project of matching things up is still going on.
Quick question. So with the approval of the previous motion to prevent these things from being located in residential zones, for example, letter H, under the development standards, so
D, please.
D4.
We'd have to clean that up to, I believe that second sentence would come out because the intention of that second sentence was to take half the height in residential zones as sort of a compromise measure between outright prohibition. But if they're outright prohibited, then you don't need that second sentence. It's extra prohibition.
That's our recommendation. That's what we passed. It's not necessarily the council is going to support. Would it make sense for us to just kind of look at this? 110 feet in a residential zone. I know we decided we don't want them. That's our recommendation. But who knows? Do you want to kind of have a backup plan looking at this? 110 feet seems to be
40 feet in residential zone.
So I'm not. So. New motor pole, okay, and that's 200 feet, right? Yeah, still.
So that's another question.
High, mm-hmm. Right? I mean, city limit is 40
stories.
Feet, 35.
35 for the most
four
part.
Stories.
A couple, 45.
So that's three times that plus.
Mm-hmm. And this is a question that Eileen and I talked about as well, and there are some cities that have lower height limits, but for the most part, this was a standard, is why it's in there. I remember there was maybe one other that we saw that was lower, so that is something you know, this is a placeholder to be discussed. We kind of pulled the standards and put them in here, so that's something we can discuss if you want to know that.
Mm-hmm. I guess to discuss it, it would seem to make sense to, again, we have a priority list of where to locate it. I also have a priority list of what that looks like, with the monopole either being not on that list or way down at the bottom in front of these other things that I think we're feeling
understanding of the technology. But I think that's kind of what we need to develop.
Well, the thought I just had is it was pole height. This is going to sound crazy coming after what I said earlier. If I had to have a pole in my backyard, I'd want it to be way the hell in the air, not down in the ground where the signal is going through the houses.
For that aspect, or for the aesthetic aspect, you would not want it.
Well, but the pole's a pole, right? I look out my window and I see a pole. Or
you don't.
Or I don't.
Because it's attached to your house.
So is there a, is there a need to know pole technology versus whatever the boxes are, I guess, or the different types of technology and what is in use today?
Yeah, I'd like to know.
I think that, to me, what are we being asked to do from a provider's point of view? What are they using in technology? Or what can we help prepare for? Because if they say that the only thing that really works is pole height, sighted transponders or whatever they're putting on there, if that works in our area versus something that's down low because of all the trees, it doesn't get through. So do we want to cut it off entirely if we say no monopoles, right? I think I would want to know that before we get to that decision.
So to that point, would it make sense to contact the companies who are hoping to file an application, say, what do you have in mind? What is the best available technology? And to have it be more of an interactive process? I mean, not opening the door to, you tell us what you want, we'll make regulations, but what's out there? Exactly.
Yeah. And that's
I know one of them was asking for a light pole. And I don't know what sort of facility they're looking to put on it, but they're asking which light poles they would be allowed to locate in the city. That's one question. But I could reach out and see what sort of facility they were thinking of putting on that pole. And then the other one, I don't know what he was looking for, so I can reach out. That's a good question.
I don't know. I mean, is that the route we want to go?
It's either comparable policies from other cities. You know, that's one way to do it. And
take all of those.
Yeah, but I think the question to the companies is, what technology are you wanting to use in our location, given our topography, our trees, and our mountains, which make us unique from some other area, right?
Yeah, it might be fair to ask them, you know, here's what our values are. What have you got?
Yeah.
You
know, how can you work?
Give them a little heads up, right? That's what you're looking to do. Here's what we're going to be expecting.
You think about Tanner Electric, right? And they, in order to protect views, they say, well, we can space our poles further apart. And, you know, that's something that they're giving us without us even writing that in a requirement if we wanted to have that. So some companies do offer.
So I got a question that relates to how this can be technically challenging to deal with. So our street lighting, aren't we pretty clear about the style of post and the way the light's cast and how high the pole is? The ones I'm thinking about are the light ballards, basically, that are round discs at the top.
We're clear about our historical district, what they look like.
So
the other ones, clear that they need to be full cut off so it's not emitting light pollution.
But I'm just saying the fixture itself doesn't lend for something to be attached to it.
Right.
But the pole does.
Below it? Below the low light?
No, if they extend the pole. So in other words, they would replace the pole, put the fixture back on.
Historic design light fixtures that have a pole out of the top of them.
Oh,
right. It's just like we kept running into that. Wasn't fully thought through because the pieces weren't connected.
It should be a gargoyle.
Yeah, I like that. Or a fountain.
See, the thing, guys, about the areas that I was talking about, if you drive those major routes or major intersections, and that's where you see those light poles. And so it becomes then really important if you're going to design a permitted use on light poles, how they're going to look aesthetically if we don't say no to those main thoroughfares, because that's where most of those big light poles are that you're going to see it.
What's the height like we have now
on intersection poles? Are they 60 or
how? Yeah, I mean, like how much higher would one tend to be above everything else?
When you think about a cedar or Douglas fir that's in the city.
No, not trees, but existing utility poles.
Yeah, but the ones that are like on Bendigo.
40 feet.
40 feet?
I'm just you know, thinking that as we're not going to figure this out tonight, but these design standards, if we have, yeah, whatever that max height is, it's 40 or 60, then we're going to double.
Yeah, that timber stand right there is going to take in the lumber operation. Those are 40 to 10 feet, 50-year-old trees. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Which is why I come back.
Our transmission poles are, I don't know that answer. Jamie thinks the light poles, the larger ones might be 60 feet.
Up to 60 feet.
The smaller ones you see at the roundabout, I think, are less than 30, but the bigger ones are up to 60. And I can ask about the transmission poles.
How have others done it? That's the piece I keep coming back to. How have the other cities dealt with this? Somebody's got to have spent tons of time and money and everything else. Mercer Island comes to mind, because I know they did.
Mercer Island created really restrictive, very specific, complicated for our staff to follow code. We did look at theirs, and it had very specific poles and intersections they were allowed to locate on.
And I did look at other city and even county siting facilities. I looked at Sammamish, Lake Forest Park, Snohomish County. I believe Bellingham. This is kind of a chimera document at this point. So, it's like I keep saying, there's a lot of different ways to spice it.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of have to figure out what works best for
I think it was really helpful for you to say that they've specified intersections, and you know that comes into maybe some technical knowledge of being able to. I guess, understand the bandwidth of certain things, but I think, you know, that might be helpful to us, you know, to preserve views and to preserve aesthetics of the rural character downtown.
So. You have not passed a motion to recommend the council that they eliminate
residential
facilities and residential. Prior to that, throughout the document, there's references to residential assets already in septic use, so we need to clean that up.
Yep, staff, we can do that.
Good point. It is after 9 o'clock, and I'll just ask the Planning Commission if they'd like to continue.
Are we through this particular item?
We are not.
See two pages left?
Yeah.
Pretty close to being through the site.
Finish up and we start two pages.
Okay. We can go with that. All right. Two pages, 27 and 28. Anybody have any comments or changes? I'm just curious, is there any reason why you don't address small cell facilities in interference? Like if we're wireless at a city council meeting and there's somebody that's broadcasting and they cancel out our city council mics?
Well, I mean, a small cell is still a WCF. I mean, the WCF is the big global term. Small cell would be a subdivision of that. So I could double check with the definitions to make sure that's broad enough, but it seems that's enough. Interference applies to all WCFs within the city, no matter the shape or size.
Got it. Thank you. Okay. That's it for me.
One technical thing I'd love to know.
Yep.
As Wi-Fi has become more and more prevalent, and I know you can complete a call on Wi-Fi rather than your cell phone using the same device, there's a part of me that's thinking, have we not skipped over everything else, the tower concept? If people are able to connect and they're wherever they are through Wi-Fi, and like many cities have done, they provide Wi-Fi to the city. I'm just wondering, somehow as an overlay, we're thinking about towers and reaching long distances when actually there's a different technology available that maybe just makes a lot of this a moot discussion. I'm just trying to...
I think from what I've read is cell companies also, or phone companies, want to run cellular service rather than lines because it's a lot less expensive, right? Put up a tower.
Yeah. So.
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I guess just, if I could, there's latitude. How much has the FCC left open? You've referenced some federal laws, and I'm wondering, are you wasting time?
No. On this piece, no. I think you have a lot of latitude. I mean, I will tell you that banning them from residential zones is something I don't recommend, but it's not guaranteed to run foul of federal law. I'm giving you the most conservative legal advice possible. But it could be that there are still plenty of options to close a significant gap in coverage. This particular piece is where the commission and the city has the most latitude to impose design standards, impose restrictions, and guide the facilities when they are initially installed. Where your hands are tied are the eligible facilities modifications, the sister ordinance to this. With that, you'll find a fairly highly technical ordinance. I know it. I tried to reduce that and make it as less technical as I could. It mostly tracks federal regulations almost identically, because that's the safest way to do it. That's where the city's hands are really tied.
I didn't think that was an insult.
Oh, not at all.
Legal
no,
jargon,
I completely agree.
Not my forte.
I completely agree. Yeah. And of course, I provide advice. The city is allowed to do. The city can take the risks that it feels warranted based on or it's my own.
Good question. Question for the commission. Rather than going into any other section, we've discussed the North Bend Municipal Code amendments to the permitted land use chart at our last meeting in depth. The CED committee had their meeting, and one of your questions was to review the permitted use under HDR with the lower floor business. They said they would like to see that and consider it. So with that, I want to know if you would like to just go through it, if you have any final changes, and we might be able to dispose of it this evening in a relatively short time. Is that okay with the commission?
You're saying you want to get rid of the whole permitted uses? Or?
No, I want us to make a motion and see if we can pass it on.
I'm not sure how to answer the question because I'm not looking at what we've talked about.
It's on page 51 of our packet.
Well, that stuff, okay.
Yeah. The land use and permitted uses that we went through where you took over when I recused myself.
I know nothing.
It's documented in the minutes. We just approved.
So this shows after our changes?
It does, and my question for staff is, was it also updated after the CED meeting? Because I noticed some things different than what we had in our meeting.
Right. No. The table was not updated after our meeting.
Okay.
But pages 51 to 53 summarize the committee's response. You'll see in some cases they don't. You guys may not be on the same page. I think it's okay to have your recommendation, and we are looking at possibly a combined planning commission and work study. I'm not sure if September is going to be full, so it could get pushed a little bit. But what I would recommend is, yeah, you have your planning commission recommendation. We go forward with that. We kind of know where they sit based on the committee response, and if there's maybe a couple big issues that
Okay. I have several.
Commissioner Ryan. Page?
I'll start at the last page, 69.
69.
So we need a motion to keep rolling on this?
No. We'll take care of it at the end so we don't have to do amendments.
I remember ever permitting farmland practices in the residential zones in any point in time. Yet here they show up as permitted uses in the residential zones, farmland.
We have some large lots that are within our UGA and that do have horses and cattle or pigs.
That's been in the code. This is existing permitted. Yeah. No change.
Really?
Right.
That shows our history.
There's limitations on how many animals you can have in residential. King County.
Number of animals per acre.
Yeah. They're cut. We follow.
So, colleagues, I have a lot of comments on this. I'm sure it's going to take some time to talk about
it. How does the commission feel?
We're here for you, Dick.
Can you do it? That's the question.
Let's keep it done by 10. He should say,
because I know you can only 10.
Did you have a hard time along the way?
No. Just a lot.
I'm sure I was at it too.
If I can start with page 63.
You have the floor, sir.
The item 2.22 recreational vehicle parks in the commercial zone. The council has taken out all the permitted uses for recreational destination. We're a recreational destination town. They removed all the recreational vehicle park uses. What is that?
They're allowed in IC, and that is it. Where else would you like them?
I don't see it on my.
It's
chart.
The IC. The ICP?
It's a red P.
Underline.
Yes.
It's difficult to decipher.
The underline. Why is it red?
New. It's new.
It's new, and so they show up in a color red.
Yeah.
It's word track changes.
If it's a straight.
And if it's a highlight, it's a planning commission change.
Maybe I've got a problem.
And Commissioner Ryan and staff, am I correct that the highlighted P in the Tanner Landing Master Plan Overlay, is that a Planning Commission request to keep it there?
I think so. I think there was kind of general talk about that. I don't know if there was a final decision. I believe I highlighted it because it was talked about Planning Commission.
That is 2.22. I don't have it. Does anybody have it that we want it permitted there?
I mean, that's the dollar. I mean, isn't it kind of already, you know?
If that continues, yeah. I believe then, yeah, I'll double check my notes, but I think that was maybe your suggestion to take it out. It was in there before, to take it out because we already know something else is probably going to happen there.
Okay. I had that we put in a P at 2.23 under HDR.
Okay.
Anything further on page 63? 64. I have a under 2.29B, indoor general storage and USOD. Although the council was a no on storage facilities, or the CED committee was. Sorry.
Sorry, you're 2929 Bravo, you said?
Yes. And we had requested a P in USOD. But the council, or the CED committee, is a no.
USOD is Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else on page 64?
In general, my comment on the council committee, pretty much disagreed with our recommendations to bring those story uses closer to the community residential, pushed everything to the freeway or wherever they can get them out of the area. They did that without any explanation. I'd like to hear them talk a little about why they would override our recommendation.
Our city administrator, Ms. Lindell, did express to me that they do not generate revenue for the city, and we have a large number of storage facilities per capita of our size of city, and so rather than seeing more storage facilities, they'd like to see other type of services for our residents.
Well, we're building small houses, so we're forcing people to store. What is she talking about?
Which I conveyed.
And there's a tax on the storage, city tax.
I think that's why we also need to go to city council meetings and make our thoughts known to change those things. Okay, anything on page 65? Page 66? 67?
Slow down, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So, 68.
Okay.
I know this is a hot topic. 432.
432?
Yeah.
Colleges, universities, technical trade, and specialty schools.
So they, the recommendation is reversing our suggestion, if I'm reading this correctly. LDR, CDLDR, and DC.
We did that.
We did that. And they changed which one of these? I'm trying to read through.
Nothing.
Okay.
That's the yellow highlight is showing our changes.
LDR looks like a strike. I couldn't decipher.
Yeah.
Right. I think that was your recommendation was to take those out
because of the traffic.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and remember the proposed one is outside of our provider.
At the moment.
You have 60% property owners, but
no.
Not yet.
No. Always is a not yet. All right, that's all I have on that page.
Okay. Any further thoughts or comments? Changes.
Just on the HDR, I know I didn't feel like we didn't have a lot of discussion on that last time and kind of moved through. So concerning adding in all the commercial and HDR, is there somewhere in there that says that it would be just the lower level?
Mm-hmm.
Where is that?
We changed that, and it was in section 1.5, where is it? No, that's upper floor dwelling. Mixed housing types, fourplexes, duplexes, cottages. Where did it go? It was so clear.
Yes. I think it called it horizontal mixed use. Make sure that's clear.
Hold on. I thought it was 1.54. which was upper floor dwelling units. And Commissioner Heller, I did express to the CED committee that it could also be that is the ones that are facing the street, and so then the ones that are behind street could be all residential, right? So you're not overwhelming commercial space, or you're not mandating commercial space. It's the option to have that. And I think that's more in line with how the development is going and how I'd like to see redevelopment in certain areas so you can have more walkability in downtown. And again, this is 10 years, 15 years down the road, too. Unless we keep getting 12,000 people a month.
We're going to reach out with a moratorium.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, any other thoughts or comments? Would anybody like to make a motion to approve the amended North Bend Municipal Code amendments to the permitted land use chart table 18.10.030 and associated minor amendments to the performance standards 18.10.040?
I'll move.
We have a motion by Commissioner Ryan and a second. Second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any final thoughts, statements? I'd like to thank the commission. I think the HDR is a much-needed change in line with how development goes. I wish I could have partaken more discussion on the commercial development aspect of it, but being the one who wrote the fairness clause, I had to adhere to it. Other than that, all those in favor of approving the updated amended North Bend Municipal Code amendments to permitted land use chart table 18.10.030 and associated minor amendments to performance standards 18.10.040, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is approved. It is unanimous.
Full beans.
Yeah, not that bad. Not that I want to get into it tonight, but for point item number six, mm-hmm. Is it possible that I could get a map or somebody could help me draw out a half mile and mile radius from City Hall or the new City Hall building? It is the Tanner Landing and Tanner Junction Master Plan Overlay District. Just has to do with the council's resolution I'm trying to understand and be able to visualize something.
Half mile.
And mile
from City Hall, the new City Hall site.
New City Hall site.
Okay, and that's in relation to this ordinance, 1626.
Mm-hmm. It's in relation to the council's ordinance that they passed to make the change. All the whereases.
Oh, right. Yeah, we can do something.
Yeah,
like
I just
an amoeba sort of feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any questions or needs for staff that they can submit at this time for anything else?
We're not going to pick up the dog on this year.
No. Would you like to pick up anything else?
You can pick it up. Start it tonight.
Yeah, no, the procedures is the only other thing.
I had just a question.
Yes.
I read all the whereas section in the ordinance 626 and read about the park, and I remember that from a city council meeting I jumped from 2.5 to 3.7, but then in the like page 87 where it gets into exhibit A, it goes back to the 2.5. It says minimum 2.5, but it sounded like specific it was going to be 3.87, so I'm just curious which is it.
Well, is one the first version, and the second one is with the edits from the shelter corporation.
Right, well, not from them, but oh. Yeah, I think this is a complicated one because there's two 1611s,
right.
And when the first one, the first emergency interim ordinances were approved, it was 1611A, mm-hmm. And that is the one that had the 4 acres approximately, and they got a little more density. And then after it was renewed 6 months later, I think it just went to council, right? They took away that extra density, and then it went back to the 2 acre part, right? And so then what is in front of you now is the most recent interim ordinances that they passed that were the lower density with, in turn, the smaller part.
Right, so if you want to compare what Dahlgren is vested to, that's ordinance 1611A.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for your studying, if you wanted to look at the difference between the two. But like Lynn said, the 1626 is what the direction has been to go towards.
I'm this close to walking away from this committee, because this is a clear issue of trust. You don't understand what I'm thinking right now. This decision by the city reminds me of the day that Chris Mortle and Brian, the city administrator was here, O'Brien, whatever his name is. They did that to two owners. They had deals cut and they backed out of them. The city cannot do that. I won't be part of it.
Commissioner Ryan, I really appreciate your comments, and that's why you are so valuable as a member of this commission, is because you have that insight and that knowledge, and that you can keep us in the loop.
I can't be part of a city that treats people for 25 years and promises they sell land to the city, to the county, in preparation for some future use. Promises made are promises kept, and they've been dashed. I don't know why this has not been talked about.
This is a tough one. This is a tough topic, and it's different council, different market,
doesn't
different environment.
Excuse it. Does not excuse it. This is vested. And money and in writing. These are promises. You can't walk away from that. You can't walk away from that.
Lightness, I'm not sure I know what you're talking about.
Well, so it's spelled out in the attorney's letter.
I'm just saying,
Jim.
This was me. I remember these things. But Brian Olson was the city administrator back in the time. Chris Lodol is still very close. Former mayor, former city council member back in the late 80s, early 90s. And they ran this town for 4 years. And this town got a very bad name for it. Ended up that rather than Brian Olson was fired from his job for malfeasance on the verge of being investigated for malfeasance. The firing dismissed him from that purpose. They could seal the records. Brian Olson did things this town that you will not, I urge you to try and find out. I can't tell you the details. I don't have the details. I just saw the reaction. But what's happening here to the Dahlgrens smells like Sideview all over again. And they have a right to be heard and be understood. The city cannot treat them like this. And I'm just surprised that the city council hasn't been given strong language to understand what they just done. It's wrong. It's got to be fixed.
So the project itself is moving along. It is vested to an ordinance. And so this is a bit of a separate divergent, this code. So, yes, it's related in that it's the same site. If
the something, if the Dahlgren property, if they backed out or it didn't happen, what's the code that we would want to see? And I think that's the recommendation we're looking for from you. But putting that project aside, because it's vested and it is going through the review process, and it could happen. And will happen. There's nothing else stopping it. It's not under a moratorium.
We don't have the power to stop it. They may choose. There may be some reason it ends up not going through, but at this point, they are vested.
Thank you for that, Jamie.
Yeah.
But Commissioner Ryan, your points are heard, and so when we discuss it, I hope then you will help guide your thoughts and how to craft what should happen next if that doesn't go through. So, with that, any final thoughts?
Just to clarify for Lynn, I guess on the wireless, you guys didn't get to the second ordinance.
Correct.
And you want that brought back.
We do, and we'd like to, whenever you can have time to bring back some comparable city policies, that we can have some guidance on any of their needs from a technical point of view of how far apart or how many, how what size, how high in the air, given our topography. Any other thoughts, questions? That's kind of, I think, at the top of my mind.
Yeah. Okay.
So the next meeting will take Planning Commission procedures, the Tanner Landing and Tanner Junction MPOD, and anything else you want to throw at us?
Mm-hmm.
Tree amendments, transportation plan.
We'll try to finish. Sorry. Right. We'll come back. Wireless, the Tanner. And related to the comment letter in here on the NB zone, we will hold a hearing on that as well to try to get some movement going on some of these moratoriums and interim regulations. So that's on page, it's in the packet with the interim page. Just to direct you. Sure. We've talked about this with document number 8.
Page 75. Oh, that's
page 55. So we talked about this. It overlaps with permitted uses, with dockets, and with the moratorium we have in place, and that's the single family development in the NV, and specifically that area out by 140th. So,
Jamie, do I understand from the CED's perspective they wanted to try and reach out to these residents
again?
That's
what we're going to do now. And then, so far, Planning Commission's recommendation with the dockets was to rezone. You guys voted to rezone to LDR, and we can do that when we're up for the next comp plan update in March. And Council committee was generally fine with that, but they wanted to make sure that that's what people wanted, because it is a big change. So we're starting kind of the formal process of a public notice specific to this. Again, we had one related to the dockets. We've been talking about permitted uses with the code amendments, but just to reach out again and get this moving, and it's a moratorium, so to get it dealt with.
And am I correct that the city is trying to think of ways that they could offset the ULID loss with street improvements?
Yeah, that was just one idea just brought up.
And see if the residents want to use the funds that way.
Right.
So I think that's good to know that that's an option.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
a go to the order?
Go to the order conversation piece. It strikes me often when we sit down here that even though the agendas are created, that there's incredible disconnect. We never seem to finish anything. And so we're always playing a little catch-up when something comes back. One thing that sticks in my head as a personal topic is cottage housing. And the thought I had about fixing some of that is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it takes three of us to have a quorum.
Unless we pass our procedures, then it will be four.
So in the event we may elect at the end of a meeting like this one, that we could have another special meeting with at least three of us to focus on one topic that was left on the table. I'm just putting it out there now, because if we did something like that systematically, maybe we could actually resolve some of these things that we've run into before people forget what the conversation was 6 months ago.
So if you're asking specifically about Cottage, I know that was owned by Jenna.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
Who is it owned by now?
It's Mike, technically, but it'll be a team effort, and it's on our schedule.
Right.
It's coming in October.
Yeah, it's not just, that's just one.
Right.
I think everybody remembers that, we've been talking about it for a while, and it's kind of gone away. That's just an example.
Right.
We're about to have another one, because there's agenda items here that we're not totally finishing. And so I just,
right.
Everybody think about that, if that sounds reasonable, then maybe we can set something up, codify it, and make it actually so that we can, at the end of a meeting, say, hey, if three of us can show up next Tuesday versus waiting for our next formal meeting.
We have to give public notice before that.
If it's, that may be on the agenda.
I think that's
right
okay.
Now.
We can check on that, but I think it's okay, or maybe I leave it now, just to agree to have a motion to call a special meeting. I mean,
you can do that. And one of the things we're trying to do, I mean, I'm very new, and I'm just trying to find out what's going on now, but I noticed that you have a huge legislative agenda of things in addition to development projects. So we are working on prioritizing them and, trying to calendar them to get out quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to work with the staff as much as we can to really try to take the high spots of the road in these issues and deal with the most important things that you guys see that we need to deal with. Because one of the reasons you don't get through it, and sometimes it's good to do it, but sometimes you just don't get work done, is to get too far in the weeds on some of these things. And you might want to return to some things at a greater level later, but the burning issues that really bother you are the ones you need to deal with. So what I'm trying to do is work with the staff and say, if we're talking about the cottage situation, what are the issues that people find, what isn't working now, what's broken? What are the real issues with it? And don't bring necessarily the whole ordinance, because we have really good technical people that once you give the direction to them, they can put the meat on the bone. But if you do all of that here, you're going to have this going on. And I've been doing this for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
And you're going to have this coming back, and you're going to be beating the same horse every time.
Yeah.
So what we would like to do is to just get those really hot-button issues. So if you all, and looking at those, we'll bring you the priority list. We'll show you what the legislative items are on the agenda. And if you agree with our priorities, we'll bring them to you in order. But it would be nice for you to take the first one and say, these are the hot button issues for us. We don't want to get in the weeds, but we want to deal with these. And then we'll take that on. And if we can cover more ground that way, and you're really dealing with the issues of body and not a lot of the nitpicky stuff, then I think we can get more done. It's just a matter of approach. You have tons to do, and these guys do too. So, how do you do it in your personal life? Let's do our 1 minute manager on these ordinances and just hit the things we need to have.
Here, anything to speed bureaucracy.
Yeah.
All right.
Anything else for good of the order? Oh, that's something.
I just want to welcome.
In our Planning Commission procedures, we have something about abstention that we haven't always followed. And a clarification on Robert's Rules of Order is that if you abstain, it will be accounted as a no vote. And now that if we approve our procedures, when we go to a quorum of four and we have a no vote or an abstention from one person, then you can't pass something. So just be clear that if you abstain, you should just vote no, right?
I beg to differ.
Okay.
If you're abstaining from the vote, you're there, but you're not voting.
Which is to be counted as a no vote.
According to Robert's Rules.
Yes.
Is that related to a quorum count?
No. But if a quorum is four and you have... Well, no, that's not true because it's a majority, so you'd still win 3-1. Sorry. I'm thinking of a 2/3 majority.
Now, why is it the option to abstain?
Well, it says that abstention, it really isn't supposed to be used, and it goes on, but if you do use it, then it says. I can send you all an email with a text.
What you're saying.
Well, I'm just going to stop saying no. I'm just going to say abstain from now on.
So why bother? Yeah. I just want to make that known. So follow those closely. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion from Curtis Von Trapp.
Second.
Second from Commissioner Lucky. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Commission is adjourned. It is 9:55.
You can make it.